Nelson.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes, more or less, of old-time radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. Listener-supported old-time radio for 15 years. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.RelicRadio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Your support makes it all happen. Thanks to those who have helped out and have helped bring us this show. We're going to start off with The Whistler and hear his episode from July 30th, 1945, titled Summer Thunder. After that, it's Gunsmoke and I Don't Know. That episode aired December 6th, 1952.
Signal Gasoline. Let every traffic signal remind you, you do go farther with Signal Gasoline. Yes, you do go farther with Signal. The Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood Signal dealer bring you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, Summer Thunder.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. There is a curious connection between an entry in the records of the British Weather Bureau and a corresponding item in the annals of the police department of Plymouth. The first indicates that at 9 p.m. on the night of August 18, 1937, tourists and vacationers on the southern channel coast of England were disturbed by a radio warning.
Attention, all vessels in channel waters between Land's End, Cornwall, and Beachy Head, Sussex. Low pressure area approaching rapidly from the southwest. Violent storm in prospect. Put into the nearest port immediately. I'll repeat that. Attention, all vessels in channel waters between Land's End.
The heat was oppressive, deadly. The atmosphere was so heavy and damp that breathing was an achievement. People at the watering places of Torquay and Brixham couldn't sleep and tried to pass the night over tall drinks and sodden bridge games on their verandas. So much for the weather report. The police records indicate that on the same night, a night when the heat had put everyone in southern England on edge, murder was taking shape in the mind of at least one human being. It began in Plymouth, in the second-floor apartment of Perry Elliott.
Claudia, for heaven's sake, where have you been? I've been calling all over town for you.
I'm sorry, Perry.
It's 9 o'clock.
I know it's 9 o'clock.
Well, why didn't you call?
I thought I'd better wait.
Will you come to the point?
Perry.
I'm sorry, dear. This blasted heat's getting on my nerves, I suppose.
I know. Now, come on. Let's sit down here and I'll explain. Now, I know this is going to be difficult for you, dear. I want you to try and understand.
What are you getting at, Claudia?
I've been up to Ivy Bridge.
What do you mean?
I've just had a talk with your Uncle Rodney.
Claudia, you had no right to...
Oh, please, Perry, let me finish. He realizes now how very foolish it was to disinherit you.
I think it was a good idea. For the first time in my life, I'm free. Listen, Claudia. I know him like a book. He's frustrated. He doesn't know which way to turn. He's discovered for once that there's something his filthy money won't buy for him. He can't pull strings anymore and watch me jump about like a marionette.
Oh, Perry, you don't understand.
I'm afraid I do. Did he call you?
No, it was your aunt.
Agatha? She knows better than that.
She's only trying to make peace in the family, Perry.
I tell you, I don't want his money. Is that clear? He changed his will. Let him leave it that way.
I said he's sorry about it. He wants to apologize.
Apologize? Wait a minute. Do you know why it all happened? He didn't approve of you. He said I'd married a social climber, that I was dragging the noble name of Elliot in the mud. Claudia, I can't understand how you could fall for it.
I've said I'll forgive him, Perry.
I see. He's bought you off like the rest of them.
Perry, you're not being fair.
And you're not very perceptive.
Don't shout at me.
Very well. Cigarette?
No, thank you.
Do you have a match? I don't know what's become of my lighter.
Here you are.
Thanks.
Well, Perry?
Claudia, darling, tonight for the first time in my life, I feel quite capable of killing a man.
Perry!
I'm rather pleased about it. It'll put me on equal terms with Uncle Rodney.
What do you mean?
I'm going to see him, dear.
When?
Now.
Two hours later, an unreal calm settled around Plymouth. Nothing stirred, crickets stopped chirping, trees suddenly became very still. And the bridge players paused to note there was an electric feeling in the air. The mind of the murderer was tense, too, like the atmosphere. Then it hit. Bridges washed out, roads became bogs. And shortly after midnight, the telephone rang in Claudia Elliott's apartment.
Yes?
Claudia.
Oh, yes, Aunt Agatha. What is it?
Something terrible has happened. Rodney's dead.
Where's Perry?
I don't know. He and Rodney had a terrible scene about money or something.
Did you notify the police?
The inspector will be here directly.
I'd better come out right away.
Here's something for you drivers to think about. Do all Chevrolets get the same number of miles per gallon of gas? Do all Fords? Of course not. For it's an established fact that the mileage you get depends on three things: the condition of your car, the way you drive, and the kind of gasoline you use. Well, those first two factors, they're up to you. But when it comes to gasoline, that's where I come in. For the same company that sponsors the Whistler, Signal Oil Company, also makes the gasoline that's become famous throughout the West as the Go Farther gasoline. Yes, for years, wise Western drivers who kept careful record of mileage found you do go farther with Signal gasoline. But what's most important is that even today, you still go as far as before the war with Signal, and I'll tell you why. You see, although certain high-octane anti-knock ingredients are reserved for war, the mileage ingredients which made pre-war Signal famous are still in today's Signal formula. And what's more, new hydrocarbons rich in mileage have even been added. Oh, but you're not interested in chemical formulas. You're interested in miles. And there's an easy way to prove that for yourself. Invest your next gas stamps at one of the friendly stations displaying Signal's yellow and black circle sign. Let your own car prove that it's as true today as before the war. You do go farther with Signal gasoline. And now, back to the Whistler.
You're stunned, Claudia, as you hang up the phone. You aren't conscious of the storm raging outside. All you can hear is Perry's voice over and over saying, "Tonight I feel quite capable of killing a man." He should be home in a while, Claudia. What can you do? What can you say to him now? No, he couldn't have done it. You mustn't even think of it. Go out to Ivy Bridge and see the inspector. Find out for yourself. Better take a coat. Perry's raincoat hanging on the rack near the door. Yes, it's going to be a rough trip, but you arrive safely.
He evening, madam.
Hello, Edmund. Is the inspector here yet?
Not yet, madam. I expect the storm will delay him considerably.
Where's Aunt Agatha?
Upstairs, madam. Be down directly.
Edmund, tell me what happened. Where is Rock? I mean, the body.
In his room, on the floor. Exactly where I found him.
You found him?
Yes, madam. I found him.
You don't seem very disturbed, Edmund.
I'm not, madam.
I see.
For 20 years I served him. Now I'm through. No, madam. I'm not disturbed.
Oh.
What are you looking for?
Oh, I had some cigarettes somewhere.
There's some on the table.
Oh, thank you.
Matches there, too.
Oh, thanks. I've got a lighter.
Could I take your coat, madam?
Thank you.
Get a soaking, madam.
Edmund, may I see the body?
Well, I don't know, madam. The inspector said to leave everything as it was.
Oh, please, it's very important. I won't touch anything.
Very well. This way. In here, madam.
Oh.
He was strangled with a chain. The marks are still in his throat.
A chain? Oh, but his head. Oh, bloody.
He was struck first, madam.
Oh, no. No, he couldn't have done it. Not Barry. Not Barry.
Come along, madam.
Claudia, Claudia, dear, where are you?
Oh, Aunt Agatha.
Claudia, darling. Why did you take her in there, Edmund?
She asked me to, madam.
You should have known better. There, dear. You may go, Edmund.
Oh, it wasn't Barry, Aunt Agatha. Really, it wasn't. He said some awful things, but really...
Just a minute, dear.
No.
I said you may go, Edmund. We won't need you anymore tonight.
Very well, madam.
Aunt Agatha, I must try and call Perry. He may be home by now.
You can't, dear. The lines are down. I just tried.
Oh, what can I do? I'm sure he didn't do it.
Of course he didn't.
I'd better go back.
The roads are impossible, dear. You'd be taking an awful chance.
I know it, but I...
Now suppose you get some rest. The storm will very likely blow itself out before morning, and you can go back to town with the inspector.
Yes, Claudia, you could use some rest, but you lie awake until 3 a.m, telling yourself over and over that Perry had nothing to do with it, never quite believing yourself. You finally drop off to sleep, only to find Perry smiling at you from 100 angles as he toys with a short length of chain. You're trying to tell him, trying to explain, but he continues to smile and tie loops and knots in the chain until finally... It's morning. 6 o'clock by your watch. All you can think of now is finding him. You dress hurriedly and leave while the others are still asleep. The storm has passed, the sky is blue, and the morning air is cool in your face as you drive back to town to your apartment. The bed's been slept in, and piled in a heap on the closet floor are the clothes Perry wore last night. The navy blue jacket and white linen pants. Sodden and muddy. You lay them out on the floor, and then... There's a suspicious-looking stain on the left leg of the white trousers. Quickly, go through the pockets. A card with a red smear on it, a fingerprint in blood. Now the coat. In the right outside pocket, a short length of chain.
Oh, no, Perry. No. Yes?
Inspector Dutton, City Police calling. Is this Mrs. Elliot?
Yes.
We're detaining your husband here at headquarters, Mrs. Elliot.
Oh, could I speak to him?
He's being questioned at the moment. If you don't mind, I'd like to come out and have a look at your apartment.
Oh, of course.
Righto. I'll be out in 20 minutes.
Very well.
Claudia, that puts it up to you, doesn't it? You can go one way or the other. You can produce the piece of chain and the blood-stained linen trousers and see Perry safely off to the gallows. Or you can do what you really want to. After all, does it matter what he's done if you love him? You'd better decide, Claudia. There isn't much time. First you burn the card. Then connect the electric iron, get out soap and warm water and a bottle of benzene. Blood is nasty stuff to get out, isn't it? It takes a lot of scrubbing. But finally it's gone, no trace. You iron it partly dry and rumple it up. There, a little dust from the floor and you can't tell it's been touched. But what can you do with the chain? There's the inspector. Quickly, Claudia, put it anywhere. In your purse, that's it.
Good morning, Inspector.
How do you do, Mrs. Elliot? You returned rather early from Ivy Bridge, didn't you?
I was quite concerned about Perry. We couldn't get through on the telephone.
Did you think of calling at headquarters?
Why, I just arrived when you telephoned.
I see. Now, let's take a look, eh? Mr. Elliot presumably slept in this room last night?
Yes.
You haven't disturbed anything?
No.
Here. Here we are. Now, these are the clothes that he wore last night?
Yes.
Blue jacket and white linen trousers. I'll take these along if you don't mind. Let me see.
What is it?
Nothing in the pockets, eh?
Well, I suppose he emptied them when he changed clothes.
I'm afraid your husband is getting into this thing rather deeply, Mrs. Elliot.
What do you mean?
I think you'd better come along.
Oh, couldn't I drop down later, perhaps a half hour? I'd like to clean up and...
It's rather a peculiar position to take, Mrs. Elliot. Perhaps you aren't aware of the fact that your husband's life is at stake.
I realize that, Inspector. I'll get my purse.
Yes, Claudia, your husband's life is at stake. And you realize as you ride to headquarters with Inspector Dutton that his fate may depend on what you do with that short piece of chain in your purse.
Oh, Inspector.
Hey?
I've got a frightful headache. Would you mind stopping for a minute at that chemist's? I'd like to get an aspirin.
Well, of course. I'll get it for you.
Oh, no, please.
Well, I insist. It'll only take a moment.
Oh, but I'd rather.
I'll be back in a jiffy.
You can still get rid of it, Claudia. Look, here comes a dump truck. It's filled with dirt. Throw it in the back. Ready? Now!
Missed it.
You'll see it, Claudia, lying there in the street next to the car. Pick it up. Hurry. Here he comes. The sewer, right next to the car. He's coming around the other side. He can't see you. Throw it.
Oh, here we are. Well, they didn't have any aspirin. Will a bromide do?
Oh, yes. Yes. That will be splendid.
Reeves?
Yes, Inspector?
Mr. Reeves, this is Mrs. Elliot.
How do you do, ma'am?
Would you get Mr. Elliot, please?
Yes, sir. He's right here in the next room.
Sit down, please.
Thank you.
Come in, Mr. Elliot.
Hello, Claudia.
Perry.
Sit down, Elliot. Now, I want the complete story this time. I must warn you that anything that you say may be used in evidence against you. Take it down, Reeves.
Yes, sir.
I've said it so often, I know it by heart.
I'll say it again.
I left Uncle Rodney's at 11:15. At 11:30, the storm broke and I got stuck in the mud about halfway home. I was there for 3 hours and all.
That's a deucy poor alibi.
I told you I can prove it. The chap who stopped to help with...
Well, what about him?
I asked him for his card. I was going to try to find him and reciprocate.
What's his name?
I didn't even read it. The card's in the pocket of my blue jacket, though. You can call him.
The card isn't in the pocket, Mr. Elliot. You can see for yourself. Here.
Why, I don't know how... Why, it was there last night. All right. Where's the chain?
What chain?
Perry.
Wait a minute, Claudia. I told you, Inspector, the man tried to pull me out of the ditch with a chain, but the chain broke. I remember putting the odd piece in my pocket. Now, what have you done with it?
I haven't done anything with it. That jacket's exactly the way I found it on the floor of your closet.
You're lying, Inspector. It's got to be there.
It's not there. You can see for yourself.
All right. When the motor went dead, he thought it might be a clogged petrol line, so we drained a quart or so of ethyl from his petrol tank to fill the carburetor. I spilled some on my trousers. I remember there was a red stain on them when I got in this morning. I never use ethyl petrol, do I, Claudia? Do I?
Oh, Perry, I...
Here are the trousers, Elliot. Look at them.
Why, what?
You see, Elliot, you don't have much of an alibi.
Why, I don't know.
And furthermore, can you explain the cut on your hands? They look very much as if you took too tight a grip on a chain. Played quite a bit, didn't they?
I was holding on to the shackle when he pulled me out. It was a chain.
Oh, of course.
It's a frame-up, Inspector. Someone's been in my apartment.
No one's been in your apartment. Except your wife.
Claudia. You.
Oh, I don't know what...
Take him back, Reeves.
Oh, Perry.
That'll be all.
Yes, sir.
You don't need to assist there, Reeves, thank you. I can make it alone.
I know it's difficult, Mrs. Elliot.
Oh, they can't convict him on that kind of evidence. Just because he can't prove he was somewhere else.
It'll go a long way. We have more positive evidence, of course.
What?
We know, for example, that he was in the bedroom of the deceased about the time he was killed.
Oh, you're wrong. Oh, listen, Inspector, you've got to believe me. This may sound fantastic, but it's true. I destroyed that evidence. I burned the card. I cleaned the red spot in the trousers.
What are you talking about?
I tell you, I didn't.
Why?
Because I thought Perry had done it. The card had a bloody thumbprint on it. I thought the pink stain in the trousers was blood. I thought I was protecting him.
What about the chain?
I thought that was what he killed Uncle Rodney with.
Hmm, what did you do with that?
I threw it in the sewer by the chemist when you went in for the aspirin. That's why I wanted you to stop.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Elliot.
You don't believe me?
No. Of course, we'll check, but... Reeves.
Yes, sir?
Take the lady home.
Oh, Inspector, please.
I said I'm sorry, Mrs. Elliot. Good day.
Well, Claudia, you're finally beginning to grasp the horror of the thing you've done. You couldn't have made a smoother job of it if you'd tried to frame your husband. There's no way out. Or is there? You do believe Perry, don't you? He didn't do it. But if he didn't, who did? Rodney wasn't what you'd call a model of popularity. He had enemies, plenty of them. Some, perhaps, with motive enough to kill him. Who would know? Aunt Agatha. As soon as you can get a call through to Ivy Bridge, you telephone her. Perhaps she can help. You feel better when she arrives at the apartment late in the afternoon.
I'm so glad you've come, Aunt Agatha. I've made a terrible muddle of things.
I wish there was some way I could help, dear.
You believe Perry, don't you?
Believe what?
He's getting stuck in the ditch and having the man help him.
I don't know.
What do you mean?
He acted so strangely with Rodney last night. I tried to make him understand, but first thing I knew, Rodney said some things he shouldn't have said, and there was a horrible scene. Perry went into a blue rage and threatened Rodney. I had to leave Claudia. I was afraid of him. What's that?
The back door blew open.
Oh, I'll get it.
Oh, leave it. It's so hot. Aunt Agatha, he couldn't. I know Perry has a temper, but he's kind and good. Oh, don't you see? It must have been someone else.
But who, dear?
Oh, I don't know. But Uncle Rodney had lots of enemies. There must have been someone who would gain something by his death. Don't you see? Perry had nothing to gain and everything to lose.
But he wasn't thinking clearly, dear.
Oh, you must know of someone else. That's really why I asked you to come here. There must be someone.
Why, I don't know.
Agatha, they can't convict him just because he can't prove an alibi, can they?
Well, I think that's pretty important.
The inspector said something about more positive evidence. What did he mean?
Why, I don't know. The lighter, perhaps.
The what?
His cigarette lighter. They found it next to the body.
Next to the... Well, that's impossible.
What do you mean?
He didn't have it last night. He left it in the pocket of his raincoat. I had it. I used it right there in the house. And when I came back this morning, I left the coat. Agatha, somebody took that lighter out of the coat and put it near the body before the police arrived.
Afternoon, madam.
Edmund, what are you doing here?
I'm listening at the door, Miss Agatha.
Eavesdropping.
So that's it. You, Edmund.
Better take it easy, madam. I've got a gun.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story. Meantime, I'd like to tell you about two live-wire young Californians who typify the more conscientious, more thorough service your car gets from a privately owned signal station. I'm talking about Bud Morley and Frank Sager, who just a year ago took over their own signal station in Burbank, California. Both, of course, had years of experience servicing cars. Well, before long, Bud Morley and Frank Sager had more than doubled their business. Now, there must be good reasons for such success, and there are. Those boys are friendly, courteous, eager to please. They not only give service with a smile, but include many little unasked-for extras. For after all, being in business for themselves, they have a personal reason for keeping customers so well pleased, they'll come back again and again. And there, friends, you have the important difference in signal service, a difference in thoroughness and conscientiousness that can add so much to the life of your car. What's more, it costs nothing extra. It's ready for your car at your neighborhood signal gasoline dealers. And now, back to the Whistler.
Well, Claudia, it came to you in a flash the minute Agatha mentioned the lighter. Edmund. The peculiar remarks he made when you arrived at the house last night. I'm not disturbed, he said. And then something about being free after 20 years. Yes, it all fits together now, Claudia. Too bad he's standing in front of you with a gun in his hand.
You're being very foolish, Edmund. You think you can get away with this?
Matter of fact, madam, that's precisely what I was going to ask you.
What do you mean?
Edmund, you took the lighter, didn't you? You put it in the bedroom next to the body before the police arrived.
Begging your pardon, Mrs. Elliot, but if I may say so, you're underestimating my intelligence. Do you think I'd be so foolish as to plant a piece of evidence which I knew wasn't there at the time of the killing? I saw you use the lighter, you know. I took your coat.
Edmund, I refuse to listen to you.
That'll be enough from you, Miss Agatha. You'll have your chance to talk directly. Inspector Dutton is on his way.
What do you mean?
I heard you saying that Mr. Perry had nothing to gain, Mrs. Elliot. That perhaps there was someone with a bit more of a payoff, you might say.
Don't listen to him, Claudia.
Edmund, what are you trying to say?
Mr. Rodney was determined to change the will in Mr. Perry's favor, madam.
But he didn't.
He'd planned to call the lawyer this morning. He told me to remind him just before the unfortunate incident. So you see, there was someone who stood to lose everything if he'd lived. If you hadn't tried to make it too perfect, Miss Agatha.
Agatha!
He's lying. The monster's making this up.
The small matter of the cigarette lighter, you see. Only you could have made the mistake of thinking Mr. Perry had left his raincoat at the house with the lighter in the pocket.
You beast. You can't prove it, you can't.
You have a chance to talk, madam. And you'd better be working on your speech. Inspector Dutton is a mighty critical listener.
Next Monday at 9 o'clock, The Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories. and by your neighborhood signal dealer. This program, directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by Harold Swanton, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Marvin Miller speaking, and suggesting that you let every traffic signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal gasoline. Yes, you do go farther with Signal. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun smoke. Starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Mr. Dillon, I'll smack you flat on the
hold
way.
Hold it now.
You don't stop that kid.
Now hold it. You want me to take a strap to you? Now hold it.
You best lock him up somewhere, Mr. Dillon. It's safer that way.
All right, Chester, just calm down. Now you come over here, son. Sit down. Come on.
Look out, Mr. Dillon. He's got hold of your gun.
Okay. Now you sit there. Don't you move an inch. You hear me? Not one inch.
He is a mean little bug.
Now, what's it all about, Chester? What's he done?
I ain't done nothing.
Now, you hush your mean little face. This here place is the law, and you're talking
what's
to the
marshal. What's he done, Chester?
I ain't done nothing.
There, you hear that,
Chester?
Yes, sir. Well, sir, I don't rightly know what he's done.
That's what I told you. I ain't done nothing.
Mr. Dillon, I was walking down to the office when I see this kid. I know most all the Sprouts in town, but not him, so I says, hello, and he starts running.
That's what he did?
Yes, sir.
And that's why you brought him in here?
I sure did, Mr. Dillon. I figured if a kid runs away from me for doing nothing, then he's been up to something, so he must have done something. You know what I mean?
No. Now, what's your name, son?
I ain't done nothing.
All right. Now, what's your name?
I ain't saying.
There, you see what I mean, Mr. Dillon? Just plain, ordinary, mischievous...
You live here in Dodge?
I ain't saying.
All right. Well, he's probably a runaway, Chester. I guess we'll have to lock him up until somebody comes looking for him, huh?
Best thing in this whole wide world to do, Mr. Dillon. Just look at where he gnawed my thumb. Best thing to do. Come on, you.
You ain't gonna lock me up?
If you've got a better idea, we gotta do something with you.
Let me be on my way.
Well, where do you live?
About 4 miles out.
Oh. Oh, sure. I know you. You're the Macklin kid.
No, I ain't. I'm Danny Birch, but... I ain't Sam.
There, I knew he wasn't town kid. I just knew that, Mr. Dillon. What did I tell you?
Nothing. Now, if you'll just close up a minute, Chester, we can get this settled and Danny can go on his way. Now, you say you haven't done anything wrong, son?
No.
Your ma know you're in Dodge this morning?
Yes, so.
All your chores done before you came?
No.
Well, maybe you better go on back then, huh? Your ma might be kind of worried.
Yes, so.
You, got a horse?
Yeah.
Okay. So long. And take it easy.
I can go now?
Sure. Go ahead, Danny.
You're Marshall Dillon, ain't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I guess I come to Dodge to fetch you. My sister sent me.
Oh?
I wasn't going to, but I've got to now because I promised Lily. She made me swear on Rattler's buttons. I figure if I didn't see, I wouldn't be telling no lie if I told her you wasn't around. But now I see you.
No, hold on. Your sister wants me to come out with you to your place, is that it?
Yeah.
Why?
On account of Pa. None of us gives a hoot excepting Sister Lily, and she's just acting like a girl.
Oh, what's happened to your Pa?
He's gone off again, shooting up the cattle. Thing is, he took two guns with him this time and a whole mess of bullets. Lily's just scared.
Your Pa been drinking a little, maybe?
I guess. Anyhow, he goes local and stays that way for a long while. But it's like Dave and Donald say, he'll get over it, he always does. They're my brothers, Dave and Donald. They ain't worrying.
Uh-huh. Now, you want me to go out with you to help find him, is that it?
I don't want it, Lily does. And I had to swear on Rattler buttons that I'd fetch
you. Oh, yeah, sure. Well, it's good that you did. Chester, get your stuff, will you? We'll ride out with Danny. I didn't get anything more out of the boy on the way out to the Birch place. No one in town knew much about the family. They'd moved in about a year earlier, came up from the territories. The folks about said Birch and his brood kept pretty much to themselves. There'd never been any trouble with anybody. I looked at the boy riding his horse bareback. He was nice looking enough, but there was something the matter with his mouth. It was too hard. You could tell he wasn't a kid who did much smiling. Maybe with his paw acting that way, I didn't blame him. He sure rode his horse proud, though. It was hot and dry, and by the time we were in sight of the Birch place, the sun was burning down hard.
Oh. That'd be Donald, I figure. Yeah, there he is.
Kid, get off on that horse and get over here. I'm gonna get yourself a licking.
Lily made me go. It's not my fault.
Do as I say. And you, mister.
The name's Dillon. I'm the U.S. Marshal out of Dodge. Your brother asked me to come out and help.
Don't need no help. Shut up, Ham. Nothing to help with. Danny, you heard. Put the horse away and get in the house.
You ain't giving me no licking.
Put up your gun. I'm coming over to talk. Come on, Chester. It's against the law to shoot a man in cold blood. You know that?
Shucks, I wasn't aiming at you. I was aiming at a rabbit up in the rise there. Your horse has scared it away.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what about your paw?
What about him?
Have you found him?
Shucks, he don't need to be found. He'll come back when he's good and ready. Pa's off hunting.
That's not what your brother says. Where'd he go?
Oh, he's going to get himself a licking, that's what, and he knows it. Get himself away, that's what.
Donald, that's your name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, look, I'm not one to interfere in family matters, but if you do need help, I mean, if your pa's shooting up cattle like Danny says, well, maybe he'll be practicing next on people, and that wouldn't be so good.
That brother of ours, he's a dirty little liar.
No, he's not, Donald. I'm glad you came, Marshal. You come into the house, please.
Chester and I followed the girl into the house. I knew it was the sister Lily. All the family I'd seen up to then had had a great likeness to each other. Donald slouched in behind us and moved around the room, nervous-like. It wasn't by rights a house. It was too big for a cabin. I had the feeling that they'd put up boards and studs where the fancy took them, and the place just grew another room like a lizard's new tail. I don't know what it was, but I got a funny feeling. It was too hot. And something was wrong. All wrong. And the girl Lily looked square at me with hard eyes.
Donald!
Huh?
Sit down. Make me nervous.
Oh, sure.
Marshal Dillon, I want you to help us find Paul.
Oh, Lily, Dave's going to be awful mad.
Somebody's got to do something around here.
Did your pa take a horse?
No.
Oh, where do you think he went, Miss Lily?
I don't know. Maybe up to Horse Flats. Maybe over by Gorman's Creek.
Creek's all dried up. There's got to be no water in there.
Did he take a water skin with him?
Uh-uh.
No, he didn't.
Kind of bad wandering around without no water.
When did he leave?
Yesterday morning. Heard a couple of shots along about noon. Dave found a calf laying dead over in the north range. You can see it there through the window. Haven't had time to bring it in yet.
Was he drunk?
Sure. Drunk as you can get. Weren't you, Lily?
I'm afeard for him, Marshal Dillon.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it makes good sense you sent for me. Well, I'll try and find him and bring him back.
Well, I ain't gonna do no such thing. You that Marshal fella out of Dart?
This is Marshal Dillon, Dave. My brother, Dave Birch.
How are you?
I told you, Lily. Told you, keep our business to us, not outside.
It's got to be somebody else's business the way it is, Dave. And you know it.
No such thing, Lily. I told her, Dave. I told her. I knew you was going to be mad.
I figure the four of us, you and your brother here and Chester and me, ought to be able to get him in before night.
Now, mister, I told you we don't need you. Or no one else. I'll be obliged you get off this property.
Dave!
Shut up, Lily. I'll see you and your fella there to the door, Marshal.
I'm sorry, but if your pa's running around dangerous, it's my duty to find him.
Donald.
I got him. Get up slow, Marshal. And you fella, reach up high. Okay, Dave. Take the guns.
The younger brother, Donald, had got behind my chair, and now he was covering us with a shotgun. Dave took our guns. It was kind of crazy, and I almost wanted to laugh when I saw the kid, Danny, peeking in around the door. But then I saw his eyes, and there was the same thing in them. Hard, angry, as in the others. The girl started to say something. Then she shut up.
Now get on your horses and ride back. And I don't want you out here again. This ain't no matter for the law, and you're trespassing.
You're making it a matter for the law right now. You know that.
Start walking.
Them guns is U.S. property.
Okay. I ain't no thief. Here, bullets I'm keeping. Figure they're worth about 2 bits. Donald, give him 2 bits.
Sure. Here.
All right, now here's your guns. Now get out fast. You come snooping back again, me and my brother's going to be shooting at you.
Return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment, but first, for centuries, arthritis and rheumatism have plagued mankind, and it's only in the last few years that science has begun to find hopeful avenues to explore toward relief and cure. The Arthritis and Rheumatism Foundation, established in 1948, holds a yearly drive to obtain funds for yet more concentrated research. A contribution to this year's drive, sent simply, Arthritis, in care of your local postmaster, will help this fine work to continue for the eventual benefit of everyone. And now for the second act of Gunsmoke. Two brothers followed us out and over to the horses. As hot as it was in the house, it was worse in the open. The saddles were burning. There wasn't another word passed between the Birch boys and me. They just stood covering us. And when I looked back 100 yards or more off, they were still there.
Well, sir, that's what comes of trying to do a kindness, Mr. Dillon. As far as I'm concerned, they deserve whatever happens.
Oh, I can't make it out, Chester. You'd think from the way they talk, they don't care what happens to their paw.
Mean bunch of children. They probably don't. My, Mr. Dillon, you ain't even riled they pulled guns on us.
I guess I'm not, Chester. You know, there's something awful wrong back there. Those boys don't look the kind to pull a gun. The girl wanted to talk, all right, but they wouldn't let her.
Just mean, that's all. Oh, you aim to go back, Mr. Dillon?
It's like I said, Chester, if it's just a family affair, you and me don't belong in it. But if the old man's as drunk as he sounds, he could make a lot of trouble. No, we're not going back right now. We're going to have a look around this country for a spell. Chester and me covered a lot of ground that morning and into the afternoon. I had an idea that we might find Birch wherever we could find water. Without a horse, he couldn't get too far, and without water, he was going to get sick pretty quick. We rode over by Gorman's Creek, and then up to Horse Flats, and there was nothing. Along about 2 in the afternoon, Chester spotted a carcass lying off the trail. It was a cow. She'd been shot 3 times in the head.
Could have happened this morning or yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Hard to tell in this weather. Oh.
Well, the ground's too dry to pick up a track. Might as well take a chance and go over to the hills.
Yeah, might be water there. Boy, I could do with some right this very minute.
Come on. I got a funny taste in my mouth looking at that dead cow. When a thing dies natural or gets killed for food, that's one thing, but even an animal has a look about it when it's been murdered. We rode the 6 miles to the hills. They weren't rightly hills, maybe more like humps rising up from the brown, dry earth. And we could get a good view across the plain. There was a patch or 2 of wild oats up there, long turned to rust and foxtails. Maybe it was in our minds, but just those few feet higher made us seem closer to the sun and hotter. You ought to be able to see if he's out there anywhere.
Mr. Dillon, he'd be dead if he was. Man couldn't live a morning out there on foot.
Well, I don't think he's going to find water up here. Now, look at that.
Dry as a bone. You see something, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, tracks, I think. Yeah, he's been up here. Went down again, though. Over there.
He sure made a long way on foot. Must be more than 8 miles from his place.
Yeah.
Oh, you darn fool.
Right.
hardware.
Yeah, I saw. Blew his head clean off. I was afraid you was going to step on him.
Well, we'll follow the tracks until they give out. Come on. Those tracks kept going in and around the hills. A couple of places we saw where they'd stopped by a dry water hole, then went on. Then as the hill sloped down to the plain again, we lost them. But the direction seemed to be headed back to the birch place. That's the way we rode. We hadn't gone more than 15 minutes along when we saw the body of a man and a horse some few feet away. They were both dead.
He wanted to make sure, didn't he, Mr. Dillon? Birch must have emptied his gun. Look at that.
Isn't it Jack Mason, one of old man Gorman's hands?
Yes, sir. That's who 'tis right enough. Nice fella, too. I knew him a bit.
Get him on your horse, will you, Chester, and take him over to Mr. Gorman?
Yes, sir, I'll do that.
I'm going to go back to the Birch place.
I'd rather come with you, Mr. Dillon.
No, meet me there, huh?
Yes, sir.
And if you see Birch on the way, watch your step. Try not to kill him. But don't take any chances.
No, sir, I surely won't.
There was killing now, and I wasn't in the mood to talk gentle and kind with the sons and girl at the house. It was the boy Danny that saw me first. He was sitting on the doorstep. He ran inside. And a second later, I saw Dave come out with a shotgun. I didn't give him a chance to make up his mind.
Get inside.
Ain't
nothing. Your arm's bleeding. Get inside now, you hear me?
I'm sorry, but I'm not arguing with you anymore. Where's your paw?
I don't know.
He killed a man back on the plane away.
You're a liar.
I told you, get in the house, kid. Now get...
I'm staying. He's a liar. Paw never killed nobody.
Where's Donald and your sister?
Out look. Mr. Diddy. He killed someone.
Yeah. Jack Mason, one of Gorman's boys.
Don't you say that. Don't you say...
Danny, get me some whiskey, will you? My arm pains.
Yeah, I will. But you ain't gonna tell no lies about my paw. You tell me quick, Dave.
Where do you think he is?
Donald Hurst shot up Horse Flats when he'd gone up there.
And he must have doubled back from the hills. Listen, you told the boy to ride into town and fetch the doc out here. He'll take care of that arm.
Okay.
When my deputy rides in, Chester Proudfoot, tell him where I've gone, will you?
Sure. Marsh?
Yeah.
Marshal, you gonna kill our pa?
I don't want to. Not if I can help it. Over at Horse Flats, I caught up with Donald and Lily Birch. I told them about the killing. And a half mile further on, the three of us saw the old man. He was crouched down on his haunches by a parched water hole. Stripped naked. He was crying. It was a bad sound. And when I saw his eyes, I knew he wasn't drunk. There was no sign of his guns or his clothes.
You're okay, Pa. Come on, please.
I knew it would happen like this. Someday. I knew it would. Boys figured it'd be shame on us all if word got out Pa had spells.
Your brothers were wrong.
Pa, please, will you? Pa, come on.
It was all right till after Ma died. And he started to act this way. That's why we had to leave our last place. People found out. Try to keep him home, but it weren't no good.
give your old pa a cup of water. And your pa's thirsty now.
Come on, pa, get up. We'll go in the bath.
That's funny. Pa never took a drink in his life. We always said he was drunk when he carried on like this. People could figure a man drunk.
I'm sorry, Miss Lilita. I'm going to have to take him in. I got to.
What will they do to him?
I don't know. But he's done murder. It's my job to take him in.
They'll hang him.
I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know.
Son, where's your brother? He didn't want to let you come out here alone. You're too young now. Where's your mom? She ought to know better now.
Miss Lily, come over here.
Oh, no,
son. I want you to listen to me. It's not my business, but will you let me give you some advice? Miss Lily... Now, you sell this place. I'll see what I can do to help. And you and your brothers go somewhere else and start afresh. You can get a good price for your land. You do that. It's best.
Yeah. We'll go.
I'm not saying you've got to. I'm saying it'd be better. It'd be better for the kid. He's seen too much of this. It's not good. You gotta teach him to smile again. Act like a kid again. You understand? You understand?
Sure. I understand.
Okay. I'll be taking him along now. We'll stop off at your place with some clothes.
All right.
We took the old man back to his place, got him dressed. His children said goodbye to him like they knew that they'd never see him again, like there was no hope. Chester rode in, and the old man seemed real happy to go back with us to Dodge. He didn't know. He didn't care. On the way, we passed the Doc and Danny riding out to take care of Dave's arm. Funny thing, the old man didn't even see the kid. He was prattling to us about the Indian Wars. At last I saw Danny Burchie. He was looking back over his shoulder at his paw. And we heard him still crying a long way off.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Anthony Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Richard Beals as Danny and Michael Ann Barrett as Lily, with Lee Millar, John Boehner, and Lawrence Dobkin. Parley Bear is Chester. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. The New York Philharmonic celebrates its 110th birthday tomorrow, and in observance, there will be a repeat performance of Beethoven's Symphony No. 5. This work was featured on the first Philharmonic broadcast over 100 years ago.
This is Roy Rowan speaking.
America now listens to 105 million radio sets and listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
The Relic Radio Show for this week. You can find more from The Whistler, Gunsmoke, past episodes of this podcast, all the others, and our Shoutcast stream all at relicradio.com. Lots to listen to there. Don't forget to visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of those links if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. Thanks for helping out. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with another hour of The Relic Radio Show.